Okay, so this morning is February 17th, 2018, and we are continuing with the triennial parasha, and we're in Leviticus 25, starting in verse 35. And the haftarah will be Isaiah 35 to verses 3 to 10. And let's open in prayer. God, thank you for today. Thank you for giving us hope, even when there's sickness, even when there's bad things happening around the world, and things that might just pull us down, that we know that you're here with us, and that you carry us, and you bring us through the wilderness, and you lead us into the land that you want us to live in. Help us to have faith to step into that land and to hear from you and to obey you. And guide us now as we read your word. In your name we pray. Amen. So let's open now Leviticus 25. And maybe we'll start with Brian and we'll go around the table. And we'll just, you just read a few verses in the passage. Whenever you feel like stopping, that seems like a natural spot. And we'll read to the end of Leviticus 26, verse 2.
All right. If one of your countrymen becomes poor and is unable to support himself among you, help him as you would an alien or temporary resident, so he can continue to live among you. Do not take interest of any kind from him, but fear your God, so that your countrymen may continue to live among you. You must not lend him money at interest or sell him food at profit. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. If one of your countrymen becomes poor among you and sells himself to you, do not make him work as a slave. He is to be treated as a hired worker or a temporary resident among you. He is to work for you until the year of Jubilee. Then he and his children are to be released, and he will go back to his own clan, to the property of his forefathers. Because the Israelites are my servants, whom I brought out of Egypt, they must not be sold as slaves. Do not rule over them ruthlessly, but fear your God.
Your male and female slaves are to come from the nations around you. And then you may buy slaves. You may also buy some of the temporary residents living among you and members of their clans born in your country, and they will become your property. You can will them to your children as inherited property, and you can make them slaves.
Let's now read Isaiah 35, 3 to 10. We and you could just read it all if you want.
Right?
Would you could read all of it if you'd like.
Yeah, but I don't have verses. I'm reading the message. So
so read, start at the beginning.
Okay. Wilderness and desert will sing joyously. The badlands will celebrate and flower like the crocus in spring, bursting into blossom, a symphony of song and color, mountain glories of Lebanon, a gift. Awesome comrades, stunning Sharon, gifts. God's resplendent glory, fully on display. God awesome, God majestic. Energize the little hands, strengthen the rubbery knees, tell fearful souls, courage, take heart. God is here, right here, and on his way to put things right and redress all wrongs. He's on his way. He'll save you. Is that or not? All is 35?
Yeah. Right
to verse 10.
Yeah,
that's the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
Blind eyes will be opened, deaf ears unstopped, lame men and women will leap like deer, the voiceless break into song. Springs of water will burst out in the wilderness, streams flow in the desert. Hot sands will become a cool oasis, thirsty ground a splashing fountain. Even lowly jackals will have water to drink, and barren grasslands flourish richly. There will be a highway called the Holy Road. No one rude or rebellious is permitted on this road. It's for God's people exclusively. Impossible to get lost on this road. Not even fools can get lost on it. No lions on this road, no dangerous wild animals. Nothing and no one dangerous or threatened. Only the redeemed will walk on it. The people God has ransomed will come back on this road. They'll sing as they make their way home to Zion. Unfading halos of joy encircling their heads, welcomed home with gifts of joy and gladness as all sorrows and sighs scurry into the night. That's pretty poetic.
So, yeah. The message always has a poetic way of saying something, but it might be hard to follow the word links though, because unless you were looking at the Hebrew or some of the more literal translations.
Did you translate
from
Hebrew?
No, he did, but he gave
it. But it's from the Hebrew.
It is.
Yeah. But. But yeah, but you won't be able to follow the word connections, maybe.
This is about the opposite of
word by word. Yeah.
I picked this Bible up from over there because I
you were feeling spicy today. So
what's neat though is that Peterson wrote this when he was writing sermons. Congregation, and he would look at the passage and say, how could I say that today? So I'm really saying the same thing, but in today's language.
Yeah.
And he really gets into the story.
Right, right. And he started with the Psalms.
Yes.
Right, because that was... People need something to... the Psalms express, you know, the heart of what's going on in our lives, and... So, yeah, it's pretty powerful work he did. So, let's go back to Leviticus and keep in mind what we just read in Isaiah. And, again, what is the overall context? Because last week, I know three of you were here. Were you here last week?
No.
Okay, because I wasn't here last week.
You were sick last week.
I was sick last week, and I'm still kind of pseudo-sick, too. Right. So what's the thesis? What's my thesis? That what's this chapter about here in Leviticus 25? The overall theme.
The span of years,
the
end year of Jubilee.
Yeah, the Jubilee. So
it's what we call it in English, and in Hebrew they call it the Yobed. Ayobed.
this and the year, sabbatical year, it's another thing that's used at the beginning of chapter 25 of Leviticus. What does a sabbatical year mean? Just in English?
Sure. The land
wouldn't be worked. The land has a year off.
Right.
But it would be 7 years.
It just means seventh,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so a seventh year. And so, right. So on the sabbatical year, the land has time to rest. And what is the Jubilee about?
50 years, 49. 50,
right.
7 sabbaths.
Jubilee is about seven.
By
seven sabbatical years. And then that becomes 49. And then people aren't sure exactly. There's different interpretations. Like, is it a 49th? Is it a 50th? Because both are mentioned. Or is it both? And how they work together. Because on the seventh year, the land would, everything would rest. And then the next year, it would rest again. So you would have like a double blessing, double portion. So this is the Jubilee year. So we always usually think in 50s. We talk about someone's Jubilee anniversary or commemoration. Okay. And so what are some things that happen in the Jubilee year? You've got the Jubilee year.
Proclaim liberty.
Yes, proclaim liberty. And who is the liberty for?
All the inhabitants.
Okay, all the inhabitants, but in a practical sense, who is it?
It's restoration of your property.
Right.
So it's not, there's not permanent possession of property because the land belongs to God.
Right.
I think that's what Sharon was talking about.
Sure, sure. It's this idea of inheritance that it stays within your family, your clan, your tribe. And it's a system of keeping the society in check, I guess, so there's not abuse of power and wealth and all of this. So on one hand, it's property. What else is it? Liberty of?
People, persons.
People, which?
Nobody can get incredibly rich.
Supposedly. We read the rest of the Bible. These are the portions of scripture we're in today. So people, it's specifically people who have become indebted, right?
Yeah.
That's their problem. So they're financial debtors, and so what is forgiven? Their debts. And it's and it's not exactly like you just get off scot-free. I mean, you do get off scot-free, but it's also, there's a whole system laid out. What we just read in our verses today, this morning, was saying you have to figure when you make contracts or when you go into these, when you want to buy someone out, you figure the years that are left till the Jubilee, and there's a whole system of calculations. It even uses the word calculate there in the Hebrew. So it's definitely much more involved than just kind of like, hey.
Slaves are not free, though.
Right. Well, that's the question about when you say slaves, what are we talking about? There's two.
Foreigners.
Yeah, there's two different types of people involved here. There's your brother. It keeps using the word brother. brother over to me.
And he can't be a slave. I mean, he can't be a true slave.
Right. So it's kind of like indentured servant.
Right.
That in American or English tradition versus slave. And the indentured servant is going to basically be in bondage for a certain amount of time, and a slave is indefinite. And according to what we just read this morning, the indentured slave, this is basically the Israelite. And under that term, your brother. And slaves over here are going to be from non-Israelites. And we just read this morning in Leviticus 25, when, you know, he serves as this indentured servant until the Jubilee, and then he's free.
It sounds so tribal. Surprisingly tribal. Because I know you have, there are other places where they talk about how slaves are to be treated
recently
and all that. But it's so interesting to say, he's your brother, and the other slaves, by the way, can be bought, sold, and given away, and forever.
And their children.
Oh, okay.
Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
They're, not only that, but when they have children, they're also your slaves forever. So it's very much like when you, like I come out of the South in America.
Exactly the same.
The slave culture that, you know, and other parts of the world where, you know, chattel slaves, where it's just like animals. And so it's very shocking if, you know, we come into this with our New Testament, like, oh yeah, Jesus loves us. And, but, you know.
Especially this is supposed to come straight from God.
That's right.
Right.
So it says right there in the text, when the Jubilee comes, this brother and his family, Leviticus 25:41, he serves until the Jubilee year, and then when the Jubilee comes, he goes free, he and his children with him, and they return to his family, which family means like clan. You know, it's a larger family, and to the property of his fathers, his ancestors. And then, verse 42, and the whole reason is, they are my servants whom I brought out from the land of Egypt. And it's funny here, it says in English, servants, but in the Hebrew, it actually says slaves. It's the word used here to talk about the non-Israelite, this chattel slave. And so in a way, God's saying, look, even though they're indentured servants among your society, technically you're my slaves as well. Like I own you, Israel. It's very much kind of like I bought you at the price and that's it. And
so there's this distinction made because God has previously rescued Israel from Egypt, and he bought them. He rescued them.
Yes.
And not the other people.
Right. Yeah. Like, so, there's good things and there's bad things, you know, being Israel.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't call it bad, but responsibilities, if you want to call it, you know, like, you've been freed, and you're no longer, you know, in this situation, what you were in Egypt, a slave. But you, in a sense, you're still a slave. You're a slave to Torah, to God's law. You're a slave to, you know, as Paul goes on in Romans, you're a slave to righteousness. You serve someone.
Yeah. Can I ask you another question about Orthodox Jews now? My daughter's an Orthodox Jew, so she says, I'm a Gentile. She says, you follow the
Noahic
laws.
Yeah.
But as a Jew, we must follow Torah.
Correct.
And so it's stemming from this, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's I mean, if you kind of read all of these scriptures in, you know, these first five books, you see the whole thing lay out from Sinai, that this is why it's, you know, we find it weird, these weird, strange laws of mixing, you know, the different fabrics or the foods, or like, why does it matter anymore? But in the Jewish mind, it's part of the whole framework that was given to start with, and we continue that. So,
and the Levites had to live that whether they wanted to or not, no choice. That's your family. That lived this very austere, strange, extra.
You mean like
regimented life.
Where they don't own stuff and they kind of have to
the
serve
marriage laws,
right? Who they can marry,
right, and when they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is the third issue around? I'm sorry, I missed the beginning. But Sheila said just now something about, isn't it odd that God sort of ordained it? But it seems to me that the whole issue of slavery, one of the issues seems to be that comes up time and again, is that once we get to the Torah at every level, God is, so to speak, putting the local culture onto a higher plane. He's actually separating out his slaves,
right,
for whatever, that they actually can be freed after, you know, certain time. But we're indentured servants to him now. But there's another group which still carries on and is not yet accepted Torah. I mean, even if you put it into Christian terms, if you want to, supposing the slave who really is being treated like a chattel, I mean, doesn't Paul say something about the slaves are to do this, that you're to respect your owners or whatever? Come on, you New Testament.
Paul, yeah.
So, you know, the law of God potentially brings everybody out of the paganism which once treated everybody like slaves. It was the king on the top and everybody was a slave. There was no separation of no virtue for anybody.
Sure.
Except maybe the family, you know, the son of the king sort of thing.
Right. So, yeah.
When Jesus said to his disciples,
yeah,
I no longer call you servants but friends, and you're adopted, and we call ourselves adopted children.
Right.
So that's, we are redeemed, no longer being slaves, no longer being indentured. Now we're adopted children. Does that come from this too?
I don't know. That's in John, I think. And it might. Because Paul, on one hand, has the imagery that he's referring to, and Jesus is talking about here, so that might be something to look into. But I just want you to kind of feel the tension here, that we don't have to have all the answers all the time about. I mean, we need to seek righteousness and justice, and you know, all of this regarding anybody. Because everybody's made in God's image. But even in the Bible, there is what I almost call this, what I've heard called redemptive movement, where you see God moving, kind of like what Jimma just said, where there are things in culture that are just wrong, and it takes people a long time to figure out, you know what, we need to stop this. And often, you know, Christians have been involved, and Jews, in changing those cultures they were a part of, you know, by being salt and light, whatever you want to call that.
Oh, and even sort of going back to the history of slavery.
Right.
You know, it's or child abuse or orphans or whatever it is.
Or seatbelts.
I don't know nothing about seatbelts. Yeah. But I love
things.
That, the idea of a redemptive movement. It takes a long time to change.
A gradual progression.
To change out of the culture which you've been imbued with.
Right.
You know, I mean,
because we're all born into this world, and we come into it thinking this is the way the world is, and this is the way it must be. And sometimes it's not. So,
wasn't that the battle of slavery in the South?
Sure.
I mean, it really was. We've always had slaves. How are we going to do with that? I mean, I treat my slaves okay, but. And
well,
it took some.
And Wilberforce goes back to William Wilberforce.
Yeah.
Well, he was ours, not yours.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, we're in this together.
Yeah.
That section you said where it handed the children, it's not written here, but that's written somewhere.
Yeah, it here, I want to read here.
They never can be free.
Yeah, verse, which you're looking at
45?
46. Well, let's just read 44, 45, 46. As for your male and female slaves who may belong to you, you may buy male and female slaves from the nations all around you. Also, you may buy slaves from the children of the foreigners who reside with you and from their families that are with you, whom they have fathered in your land. They may become your property.
Wow.
And then 46, you may give them as inheritance to your children after you to possess as property. You may enslave them perpetually. Yours doesn't have that?
It's slaves for life, but not the part about, I mean, and it says the members of their clans born in your country, but it sounds more like this generation, you know, clans born in this country. It didn't seem so clear that it was, but it does say for life, and you're saying in
Leolam,
which is like
forever,
forever.
Yeah.
It's his inherited property.
Right.
The idea is having a slave
forever. However, as for your brothers, the Israelites, no man may rule over his brother harshly. So.
But even in those times, slaves could be
Well, I mean, they could be freed, just like, in, you know, anybody who wants to buy them or free them or whatever, there's always...
Maybe there would need to be a clause in the culture where a foreigner could become free even if it was purchased. Anyway, that's...
Right. But, yeah, I'm just trying to show the disparity here.
Right.
And I want to help... Maybe you've never noticed this phrase before in 46 at the very end there. It says... No man may rule over his brother harshly. Does everybody see that?
Mm-hmm. I've got, but regarding your brethren, the children of Israel, you shall not rule over one another with rigor.
Yes. Great.
This message says tyrannize.
Yep.
Ruthlessly. And ruthless means without mercy.
Yeah. It's in Hebrew, it's the word perech. And...
What, for rigor?
For, like, ruthlessly or what was the other term that was used?
I've got tyrannize.
Yeah, the tyrannize is the yeah, it's the rode.
Tyrannize with ruthlessness.
Yeah. But anyways, this word, perech, it only appears 6 times in the Bible, and it's a few times here in Leviticus 25. It's in verse 43, verse 46, verse 53. And where does it come from? And it's not just perech as well. It's the rode part that, you know, we'll get to that part as well. But where does it come from? What did God say you can't do to my people? Or, you know... You can't make them slaves. Why can't you make them slaves? Because they were slaves in Egypt. Go to Exodus 1, 13 and 14.
That's kind of cool, an eternal covenant. When you
free
them forever.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like God bought them, and now they're his property.
Right.
So they're not free forever. They're no longer free at all, but they are free from Egypt.
And everyone else.
Yeah.
Because
all of their people.
Right?
All of their people.
You're saying they're God's slaves? That's
yeah.
Right.
Don't find some of my slaves. They're my slaves.
Yeah.
You can't count.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was interesting to me that my daughter said, we still belong. we're under that, and there's a difference between Gentiles and Jews. Mm-hmm. Gentiles, you don't have to worry about that. But we do because we're bond.
Yeah.
And that was a concept I was...
Like, we wouldn't have a choice. This is...
Yes.
We're bound by it. So we're doing it because we want to or we choose to or... But it's like...
I think that's right, though. I mean, I think that's right. And I think that Israel is... If you turn it round, what Yeshua did was to bring us out of Egypt, bring us out of the land of sin. And we became his indentured servants. We became his slaves. But for most Gentiles, the root stops there, or begins there, if that's the word. It doesn't go back. And your daughter, because she's not a believer, doesn't realize that it's not one or the other. She is hugely privileged. She is a Jew, and she's privileged, and she can say that. And if she's pointing fingers at Gentiles, it's out of her ignorance, and also because she's been surrounded for years, no doubt, by Christian Gentile quasi-believers who don't understand that their roots do go back here. You can't have one without the other.
She's not actually picking on me because of that. She's saying, you don't have to follow the 613.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You don't have to follow that.
And
I must.
Well, she does, but she can't because it's impossible. I mean, that's the whole reality. So she struggles on with it.
Speaking from a Christian's
point of view.
I'm a Jew, you know.
So, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Exodus 1:13-14.
So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor. We got the same word, right?
Yeah. They serve rigorously.
Made their lives bitter with hard bondage.
Ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter by hard service with mortar and bricks and by all kinds of service in the fields. Every kind of...
It was also... which they made themselves with rigor. So we've got it actually twice, have we?
Exactly. And this is where it's coming from. When Leviticus 25 is saying, don't make your brother serve rigorously or ruthlessly, this is, he's going back to this. And if you know your text, you know, oh, yeah. He's not a slave from Egypt. And so,
in a way, even the slaves, even the foreign slaves, are not to be like slaves. This is still not good enough by our modern sensibilities, but in a way, they're saying even your slaves here who are non-Israelites, you're not allowed to do to them what was done to you as slaves.
Right.
You don't just get to...
Exactly.
No, but...
Because there's residents, foreign residents.
Yeah.
And then there's slaves. They're not the same.
Yeah.
Right, but it's saying, like, don't be ruthless to your slaves like they were ruthless to you in Egypt. So...
Actually... Yeah, if you look at these three usage in Leviticus 25, so look at verse 43.
Leviticus
25:43.
Yeah.
Who is he talking about?
There he's talking about your foreign slaves.
He is? 43?
No, he's talking about Israel.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
So you've just made the Bible even harsher.
Okay.
Thanks, Danny.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
And in verse 46, it's used there. Who's he talking about?
Your fellow Israelites.
And then verse 53. Yeah, so I think in all three cases it's a fellow Israelite. So this is the context again of Israel was a slave in Egypt. They were ruthlessly dealt with there, but you can't deal with your brothers in the same fashion when they owe you money and they're in debt to you. And the actual whole phrase, don't rule over ruthlessly, appears one place in the entire Bible. The rule over ruthlessly doesn't appear in the Exodus passage. Just the ruthlessly part appears. But the rule over, or to dominate, or tyrannize, it with ruthlessly only appears one other place. It's in Ezekiel 34, chapter 34, verse 4. And I'll start in verse 2. Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel and say to them, to the shepherds, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who have been feeding themselves. Should not shepherds feed the flock? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the choice animals, but you do not feed the sheep. You have not strengthened the weak, healed the sick, bandaged the injured, brought back the strays, or sought the lost. But with force and harshness, you have ruled over them. And so, what do your translations have there at the end of that verse?
You have ruled them.
Cruelty, you have ruled them. With force and cruelty, you have ruled them.
So that's our phrase there. Those two words of ruling ruthlessly, harshly. What's Ezekiel's context here? Who is he talking about?
Bad shepherds.
Bad leaders. Shepherds are leaders. And in the ancient context, leaders are who?
Kings.
Kings and the princes, you know, the nobility, the people that have their tsars, ministers, you know, in his government. And so we're going to come back to this passage later on. But remember we read
Nice. I just seen, I didn't cotton on, that this word, Perak, is again here.
Yeah, that's why we're reading it.
Well, I thought so, but because it...
Okay, this is the one time that we have the verb, like we, of rule over and this descriptor of ruthlessly together, just like in Leviticus 25. So I think this is kind of a special connection. We'll come back to it. Ezekiel 34. But you remember when we read Isaiah 35 earlier from the prophetic section? How did it start off in verse 3? Of course, it's kind of hard with Peterson's translation there, but how does verse 3 start in Isaiah 35?
Strengthen the feeble hands.
Strengthen the hands.
Strengthen the knees of your
blade. Yeah. That kind of sounds reminiscent of Ezekiel 34, right? What did the shepherds not do? They didn't strengthen the weak. They didn't heal the sick. They didn't bandage the injured. They didn't bring back the strays or seek the lost. Back in Isaiah 35, strengthen the hands that have gone limp. Steady the knees that shake. Tell those who panic, be strong, do not fear. Look, your God comes to avenge. With divine retribution, he comes to deliver you. So, keep all of this in mind. Let's go back to Leviticus 25 as we build up to our climax this morning. So Leviticus 25 is kind of finishing up here with the Jubilee and the idea of redeeming people. And the word that's used, I think Sharon talked about it last week with you, for redeem, redemption.
Go ahead.
Is right. It's Goel is the redeemer, and it's also redeeming. I think I'm gonna just turn this off.
6:25, the Jubilee has a big connection here with the Goel. Who is the Redeemer in the Jubilee? What's his job?
In
the Jubilee, when we've been reading Leviticus 25, what does the Goel, what does the person who redeems, what do they do?
They buy back the slaves.
They buy back property, they buy back people, they pay off debts. And who are these people in the society?
It's a close relative.
What story do we immediately think about in the Bible?
Ruth,
right? Ruth had, it wasn't Ruth, but Naomi had, who was her close relative?
Boaz.
Second
close.
Yeah, he wasn't the closest?
No, we have what Sharon called John Doe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy.
The anonymous man.
He's not named.
So he's not shamed in the future for rejecting this.
So.
That's right.
So we have this idea of redeeming, redemption, buying back. It happens in the 50th year, and it also happens. There's this other thing called the Shnat Shemitah, and.
7 years.
Shemitah, we'll just call it this. And this is every 7 years. And you see it in Deuteronomy 15. That's where it's laid out with specifics. But it's essentially like the same as what you have with the Jubilee. So if you look in Deuteronomy 15, you can see it there. It's every seventh year. And in English, we call it the year of release, if you've ever heard that. So, in Hebrew, Shemitah is used for this, and in Hebrew, the Jubilee is called the Yovel. So why do I bring all this up? What's the thing that connects these two?
Being redeemed.
And it specifically is, it's redeeming these debts, redeeming these people, redeeming this property. So the reason why I bring all this up is in the Septuagint. This is the Greek Old Testament, which was a translation of the Hebrew before the time of Jesus. When they were translating release, they used the word in Greek for release, aphesis. Okay, when they got to Jubilee, which we have in Leviticus 25, they didn't just use the word Jubilee.
Jubilee is just a made-up English word that is just...
But they didn't use Yovel either. Uh-huh. They didn't transliterate it. They just used aphesis. Mm-hmm. They used
again,
the same word.
Same word.
They used what? What was the word they used?
Release.
They use the same word. They use the same word in Greek for both Shemitah and,
oh, I see.
And Jubilee.
Because it's the same
concept.
That's what I'm assuming. I haven't done a lot of background on it.
But the Jubilee years, aren't they free to your own land? So that's a huge thing. Whereas
right.
In the seventh year, what are you free of? The land rests and the people, what happens to the people?
There's also some things going on. Same thing with the people in the seventh year as well.
It's a different schedule. It's not that it's radically different for
it's
them.
Not just a land like debts or
in the seventh year.
Forgiven.
The Jubilee is you let the land revert back to cancel debts.
So if you were an indentured slave because of a debt, you get released. You get set free.
In seventh year and the
okay, but here's my point. You can read Deuteronomy 15 later. Is that there? What's another word that we use for to kind of redeem debts? Like today, technically in the law, to forgive debts. And the reason why I bring this up is that when you come into the time of Jesus.
and you start reading the New Testament, the stories of Jesus, and it says that he forgives sins. Like, for instance, in the Lord's Prayer, we have these two different translations of forgive us our debts as we forgive those
that
who are indebted to us or debtors. And then those other, forgive our sins as we...
Or trespasses.
But it's actually debts. The word, in its original meaning, is financial debts. That's where it's coming from. That's where this is coming from. Okay? So you see that...
You're seeing the prayer in Hebrew that he would have originally said, the word used would have been debt.
Yes.
Is there a difference in concept there? You're pointing out the reason.
I'm saying that if you want to see the background of forgiveness of sins, it starts here at the Jubilee. Our concept of forgiving someone for whatever they did to me, it's not just like they owe me some money now. It's something I hold against them, that they've done something wrong to me. So it's a debt, a spiritual debt. That's what I'm trying to say. That it comes from this.
Yeah, but it's very
Testament.
Yes, but
not from Jesus changing it into sins.
No. Right. That it by the time of Jesus, it has this meaning that's spiritual as well, not just financial.
But it's very interesting because if you start with finances, and if you really do forgive somebody for stealing from you or whatever they've done or conning you or whatever it is financially, that's really the beginning of a whole nother layer. You can't forgive somebody spiritually or even really pray for them if they still owe you something and you're really bitter about it and I'm going to have it out with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a complete block.
You have to
where your
go.
Treasure is, there your heart is also.
Right.
And if your treasure is still worrying about your financial debt and how they haven't paid it back, it's very, very hard to go on and...
To really forgive them in your heart.
Yeah, to really forgive them in your heart and go on pray for whatever it is, whatever... Spiritual, to get into the spiritual thing. I mean, there's nothing very spiritual about money.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's done you some terrible deed, you've got to get over that before you can be ever so spiritual about something.
So in a way, you're giving up the right to demand the justice on the issue. I still need my money back.
It's saying, no,
the money is gone. I've forgiven it. But in the same way about anything, then.
It kind of goes back to that idea of slavery, about you cannot hold someone in slavery to your, bad feelings or your grudge or whatever it is you hold against them. If you forgive them, if you come at it from the concept of the Jubilee, then they are not slaves to you anymore. This is kind of a way to look at it. But in our world, you can hold many people in slavery to your bad feelings, unforgiveness.
Control.
They owe something to you.
They owe you.
Jesus teaches all of these parables on these subjects
right.
of forgiveness, right? The guy who wouldn't, he owed the king all this money, and then the king forgave him of millions of dollars, and then the one guy just
beats up.
It's the same concept there. It's a slavery,
It's interesting because all we've ever had so far in the laws are forgiving, except for murder, forgiving mistakes.
Right.
Feminist mistakes.
Right.
So you're saying to Leviticus 25, that's where the origin of forgiveness of sin, of culpable sin.
But right, but I'm saying in its original context, it's not got that meaning. It's forgiveness of debts.
But by the time Jesus,
yeah,
it was
right.
already in the culture.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
But what about when God redeemed the people from Egypt? There's more than just financial freedom. There's There's some other kinds of things. Aren't those in kind of surrounding it and part of it?
I mean, of course, you know, there's always spiritual life and, you know, we have souls, implications, but I'm just talking about right now this text we're looking at.
But how could you ever get to them? Because the laws of cleanliness are so demanding. It's so weird. I mean, you'd be so busy, you'd never be able to think about it, you know?
Right.
Really?
We'll have to bring Nick in for that.
So where would we ever get to spiritual things?
Right. Well,
except loving God.
As they say, it's all spiritual.
So in Living Jewish, the paper that came out this weekend, there was a little note that said that when the Israelites came out of Egypt, each of them had at least 90 donkeys filled with
gold, silver.
Something. Uh-huh. And so that's kind of paying back all the financial, you know, all our...
The 400 years of slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the 90 donkeys is not biblical, but what we do know is they came out with a whole bunch of stuff.
Is it?
They came out with a whole bunch of stuff, and then they had to give it for the building of the tabernacle. And here they are, putting in gold and silver and heaven knows what all. I'm doing the parasha today, so you'll hear about it, to build the tabernacle.
So they didn't give that much. I mean...
We're running out of time here, and
sorry.
I got to get to my punch. We're going to end right now. I want to end with Luke 4. Jesus came to Nazareth, verse 16. And he went to the synagogue, and he began to read from the scroll of Isaiah. Very famous. And I'm just going to read what he read from Isaiah. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives. Okay, Jesus is reading from Isaiah 61 here. When you hear release to the captives, what do you immediately should be thinking here? Jubilee, right?
Jubilee.
And it's true. Isaiah 61 is actually quoting a bit of Leviticus 25, verse 10 here. But what else is a part of this jubilee that Jesus is proclaiming? Regain sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed. Here he's quoting from Isaiah 58, verse 6, where it's talking about Israelites need to take care of their brothers who are poor and hungry and are basically slaves. So again, this is like a double referral back to the jubilee. From Isaiah 58, back to Leviticus 25 of take care of your brothers, right? When your brother is this, don't treat your brother ruthlessly. All this stuff that we've been looking at. Again, more Jubilee imagery. And what's going to happen? This is going to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And that word year should be a little hint of, hey, year. Yeah, Jubilee, release, all these years you've been talking about. And so this is where we come this morning. And if we go back to Isaiah 35, if you want to turn there, we read it already, but let's just remind ourselves again this reading from the prophets. I'm going to read it, Isaiah 35, verse 3. Strengthen the hands that have gone limp. Steady the knees that shake. Again, you see this picture of freed brothers who were indentured slaves or slaves and helping them. Tell those who panic, be strong, do not fear. Look, your God comes to avenge. With divine retribution, he comes to deliver you. Then blind eyes will open. Deaf ears will hear. So here we have the blind seeing. This is not a common idea in the Old Testament. Matter of fact, I think it only appears twice. Here and in Psalm 147, I think it is.
That blind that will...
No, that the blind
will see.
Like in a
physical sense.
yeah, like a healing or miracle. Yeah. Verse 6, then the lame will leap like a deer. The mute tongue will shout for joy. For water will flow in the desert, streams in the wilderness. Where did water flow in the desert and the wilderness?
The bodies.
Right, but in the Sinai, right? When they were leaving Egypt. So again, you kind of have this slavery imagery of freedom from Egypt. So you kind of see the people walking.
Streams in the
water will flow.
When Moses struck the
rock. Remember,
oh, right.
The water,
streams in the desert, right.
The
right.
Water will flow.
Right.
The dry soil will become a pool of water. The parched ground, springs of water. Where jackals once lived and sprawled out, grass, reeds, and papyri will grow. Like a highway will be there. It will be called the way of holiness. The unclean will not travel on it. It is reserved for those authorized to use it. Fools will not stray into it. No lions will be there. No ferocious wild animals will be on it. They will not be found there. Those delivered from bondage, there you go. Those delivered from bondage will travel on it. So that's a confirmation here. We're dealing with freed slaves. Those whom the Lord has ransomed will return. They will enter Zion. Everybody knows Zion is Jerusalem, right? With a happy shout. Upending joy will crown them. Happiness and joy will overwhelm them. Grief and suffering will disappear. And so we have here in verse 9, those delivered. Hebrew, it's ge'ulim, which is our word again about goel is a redeemer. Ge'ul is those who are redeemed. And so you have this idea of, makes you want to think of the Jubilee, like we have in Leviticus 25, that this redemption is for those who have been enslaved and people are being freed. And also, I think it's also significant that Jerusalem is brought into this, because here they're coming into Jerusalem. And on one hand, people are being redeemed, but as we also know in the Bible, Jerusalem gets redeemed. In Luke 2, we've talked about this in this Bible study, when Jesus was born, they took him up to the temple, and was it Anna or Simeon? But it was saying they were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. And then when they saw Jesus, they praised God. So there's also this idea, you remember Jerusalem was conquered by Babylon and it sat desolate with jackals and, you know, wild animals is how the prophets talk about how it looked. And then it's redeemed. It has its jubilee later on. You know, according to Daniel, it's 70 years, but other people kind of see it closer to 50 years, which is closer to the Jubilee year. If you were to add up the years from Cyrus until when Ezra returned, it kind of gives you that idea that it's redeemed. And so, and also notice the blind, right? The blind, the lame, that there's this healing going on. And so when you come to Jesus's ministry on earth, His ministry is not like I'm trying to stir up a political rebellion. I'm not trying to come up with a new philosophy on how to live. He's going to people who are basically enslaved to sickness and bad lifestyles and sinners, right? I've been called not to the righteous, but to the sinners. And Paul loves to talk about, you know, a slave to sin. And this is what redemption's about. It's being forgiven your debts or forgiven your sins. So we'll call it here this morning, but if you want any other input or questions, we can talk some more. And Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.